Today's program is brought to you by Happy Chef Uniforms, the perfect style, whatever your recipe. Visit happychef.com to order your free 2018 catalog.
Food and travel, they go hand in hand, and chances are, if you're a fan of Heritage Radio Network, you love them both. Between April 10th and 24th, we have six incredible food and travel experiences up for auction at charitybuzz.com. Go on an underground food tour of New Orleans with a rocket scientist. Get your hands on VIP passes to Feast Portland, or enjoy a ranch-to-table experience in wine country. Four of the experiences include hotel stays at some of the most iconic properties across the country, including the newly reopened Hotel Claremont in Atlanta. Now's your chance to win the ultimate Bourbon and Beyond weekend in Lexington, or take in a Latin food tour of New York's outer boroughs. You'll eat, drink, explore, and relax, all while supporting Heritage Radio Network. Help us keep the lights on and the mics hot. Go to heritageradionetwork.org/auction and bid now.
Welcome to Food Without Borders, a show about food, politics, and identity. I'm your host, Sari Kamen, and you're listening to heritageradionetwork.org. Today on the show, I'm on the line with Noopsa Philip Vang. He's the founder and CEO of Foodini in Washington, D.C., a company providing authentic multicultural meals crafted by emerging immigrant chefs delivered to your door. Welcome to the show, Noopsa.
Having me.
Well, I am so glad you could be here today. Why don't you begin by telling us, I know I gave the tagline of what Foodini is, but I'd love to hear what it is in your words, although those are probably also your words.
You're right about that. Foodini is we're an online restaurant, and we hire immigrant and refugee chefs, and we help them sell their home recipes direct to customer. So we do dinner delivery, online dinner delivery, so people can order for themselves or their family. And then we also do catering as well for small events to big events. And our focus is really about creating opportunities, job opportunities for communities of diaspora, but also at the same time sharing really amazing food from all around the world with our communities right here.
Right. Well, before we, get into more specifics about Foodini, I'd love to hear a little bit more about you, where you are from originally, what your background is like, what kind of food you grew up eating.
Yeah. So I am from the Hmong community, which is an ethnic group from northern Laos. And so my parents were born there and they grew up there. And then they became displaced and came to the U.S. after the Vietnam War as refugees. And so they, have been a really strong influence in my life and just their experience. And so I grew up eating, really, really great food. Hmong food is kind of a mix of everything from, Chinese to Thai to Vietnamese to Laos. It's kind of a mixture of all of those different things mixed in with kind of the traditional kind of greens and veggies that they'll find, in the northern parts of Laos, in the mountainous regions of the area. So I grew up eating that. And at the time, I didn't know it, but I was, wanting hamburgers and fries because I grew up here in the States. I was born here. And so what I didn't know was I was getting, really great, amazing food, with really strong influences from my family and from the Hmong community. So that's what I grew up eating. And so when I came out to D.C., that was one thing that was really missing because I came out to D.C. for grad school back in 2014, and that was one of the things that I was missing a lot of. And so that's kind of how this whole idea of Foodini started, was trying to connect with local, local chefs and cooks that, have really strong skill sets in cooking their native foods and being able to just get a taste of that home cooking. And that's really kind of what was the initial idea for me. But then, you know, my experience growing up in a refugee family, you know, my parents didn't come here speaking English. They didn't have very much education. And so for us growing up, you know, I didn't see them a lot because they were always working. So finding, you know, good, decent paying jobs were difficult for my parents. And so one of the things that, you know, was different about their experience was that they were really great at cooking, you know, their food, their cultural foods. And so that was really the beginning of Foodini, was creating a space for people like my mom and my dad to earn a living using the best skill that they had, which is cooking their native foods and being able to sell it to people and share their foods and their cultures with the larger community around us. So that's kind of the story of how Foodini started, but really it was the biggest influence on it was just, you know, my upbringing and also the experience of my family and my parents.
Yeah, I mean, that all makes sense. And I've heard from other guests on this show who were born in America but had immigrant parents such as yourself. Like, they had a very similar experience where they grew up kind of wishing that they had more, you know, generic American food growing up, because they were very self-conscious that, you know, they went to school with food that was very other from, you know, their other classmates and peers. And then once they became adults and, you know, were more comfortable with embracing their identities, felt this craving and nostalgia and it's really like the food is sort of like the most like accessible way to kind of return to that feeling of comfort and have felt inspired to pursue, you know, like how you've created Foodini, have pursued other things inspired by that quest and search. So I love hearing that. I think it's such a great story.
I think I can probably relate with a lot of people who've been on your show with having their lunchbox moments at school.
Yeah, I mean, like already feeling self-conscious because you stood out, you know, because of how you looked. And then, you know, having food that smelled different and appeared different was just, you know, a whole nother layer of feeling like you didn't fit in or there was something different about you. But I always love the resolution. So what did your parents do when they came to the United States? Did they, I think you mentioned they were struggling to find work. Did they cook or what did they do for jobs?
So my mom and my dad, when they came to the States, my dad had actually, he was only probably early 20s. And they had already had three older sisters in Laos. And so when they came to the States, my dad had to find work like immediately to support our family. And so he started working off, and they first relocated to the first city that they came to, was Chicago. And so that's where my older brother was born as well. So I have five siblings total, four sisters and one brother. I'm the youngest. Okay. And so when my dad came, he started working in the factories. So he worked at like Snap-on Tools. He worked at a paper company. So a lot of kind of the blue collar work. I think one story that I always hear is like my dad put like a mattress in his car and in like a van. We had like an old, I think it was probably like a station wagon back in the day. And he would put a mattress in the back because he would actually sleep. That's where he would sleep between jobs. And so that was just something that I think that always kind of stuck with me.
Yeah.
And my mom, she actually did some part-time work like at the schools and things like that. But she was also taking care of my sister, my older sisters at the time too. And the other compounding thing that was, I think, really challenging for my dad was he was the oldest in his family. And also my grandpa, he was killed in the war. Mm. And so he had to take care of all of his siblings and my grandma and everybody as well. And so he took on that responsibility of taking care of not just his family, but, you know, everybody.
Yeah, that's sort of overwhelming to even think about. So the chefs that you employ at Foodini, who are they and where did you find them? And I guess I should ask, like, when you started Foodini, were you immediately looking for someone who could recreate like the specific kind of food that you grew up eating?
Yeah, I think the first chef that we initially worked with, and it was funny, is that it was my summer in between my first and second year of grad school, and then I was working on Foodie, and obviously I'm not a great cook, so I'm not going to start cooking and trying to sell my food. But it was funny because my friend, his mom was visiting for the summer, because he had just had him and his wife just had their child, and so she was in town and she was watching the kids. She was just kind of, you know, hanging with the kids over the summer, and I know that she was a really, really good cook too. And so I asked her if she would be willing to help us, to help do some beta testing for us over the summer. And so she was very gracious enough to help me, and we did a couple different tastings and things like that. And so she's Hmong as well. And so she made a lot of the foods that I grew up eating, which was great, because mm-hmm. You can't really find Hmong food around DC. But she was the first one to help us. And then after that, I had connected with my friend, Chenapa, who is in the Lao community. So she's Lao, and she told me about this woman who was a really, really good cook, and she would always make stuff for, like, the temple and all these community events and things like that. And so she set up a meeting between us, and her name is Mem. And Mem, you know, I met with Mem, and her husband was there, and basically she just made a big spread of food, of different Lao dishes, and I was just in love with, you know, everything that she was making. And as soon as like the first bite that I had, I was like, wow, we gotta get her featured on Foodini.
Yeah.
And so she's been with us since the beginning. She was our first official chef. And then when we first started, it was just me and her cooking together. I was chopping vegetables. I was,
doing
the cleaning up and doing the dishes and all that stuff. And she was, you know, cooking up a storm, and it was just me and her for a good, probably 6-7 months. And then we started to work with, some really great partners like my church, National Community Church in DC. They do a lot of refugee resettlement work, and they were talking about some of the families that they were assisting. And I was like, oh my gosh, I need to connect with them. I'd love to work with them and try to figure out how we can partner. And it was just kind of real by coincidence, because I was just at church on a Sunday and they were up there speaking about it. And it really led to a great relationship with our next chef, which Chef Hassan, who's a Syrian refugee. And, you know, she's cooking up falafel and all of these different dishes from Syria that I had never had before. So it was really cool to be able to be introduced to a new kind of cuisine and a new culture. And so from that point on, we started to beginning to work with a lot of different churches, synagogues, refugee resettlement organizations who are, you know, working with the newly arrived families, helping them settle in. And they've been really great partners because they're able to help us identify, like, you know, who's looking for a job, who might be a good fit for this kind of chef, kind of cook role. And so it's been a really great partnership for us, you know, since for about a year now, helping us identify potential chefs and kind of work through all of those different things, especially with, like, sometimes language may come up, or, you know, we don't speak the same language, and it's a great opportunity for us because it's very difficult for us to come in and be like, hey, we want to help you sell your food. Mm-hmm. And they're like, I don't know you. Why are you trying to help me? You know, like, they're just new to this country. And, like, I think the trusting is always very important. And so having these partners facilitate that relationship really kind of eases the first meet and greet and introductions, and it helps us really build really strong relationships.
Do you ever lead with the food? Like, do you ever think, you know, like, oh, I wish we had Syrian food, and then try and find someone Syrian? Or does it just, it's always the person comes first, and then, you know, wherever they happen to come from, like, that just happens more organically?
I think for us, it's definitely kind of both. We definitely want to, for now, I think we're really focused on providing a good mix of different cuisines from, you know, everywhere, from all different countries. And so for us, I think just being aware of the, you know, the situations that are going around the world, and seeing what communities are really in need. And I think, you know, obviously, you know, with the Syrian refugee crisis and a lot of the refugees coming from the Middle East, I think that's definitely something that, I mean, just makes sense for us. Like, that's, you know, that's what we're trying to do. But then also reaching out to other communities that are, you know, looking for opportunities as well. So more recently, we've been working with another organization to help us, which is looking at different communities that are from, like, South America or Central America or Africa as well. And so I think it's a mix of being able to, you know, provide a good variety of different types of foods and cuisines, but then also keeping that the mindset of, you know, what communities are we looking to engage with and support and help build over time.
Yeah. You've noted that, and you kind of touched on this, all of the chefs that you work with are emerging. So why is that an important feature when you're, you know, interviewing people or seeking out new people to work with? They're not established chefs.
Emerging, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I think the emerging piece of it is something that's important, I think, for me personally as well. Because my mom, you know, she was never a professionally trained chef, but, you know, she could cook up a storm. And so I think it's really about being able to give recognition to those who deserve it, and to recognize those who are able to provide something really special to our communities. So I think that's something really important. And then the other piece is just being able to showcase maybe foods that, you know, aren't Michelin star or, you know, don't have as much of a following. And I think that's kind of what is really exciting about what we're doing, is kind of putting a spotlight on food that usually might not be as familiar or as popular.
Yeah. So with that in mind, how do you decide which recipes are chosen? And is it always the chefs kind of calling upon their own arsenal of recipes that they know?
Yeah, the selection process, the menu selection process is interesting. It's cool. We always leave it wide, really open for the chefs to provide their knowledge and kind of what they would like to share with our customers. So we always kind of say, hey, we're looking to have maybe 2 to 3 new dishes in the next month, and then kind of getting a feel for, like, what are they thinking? What would they like to make? What's something that, you know, they've been thinking about making, or maybe they want to mix it up and do a different, using a different meat or a different vegetable. So it's very organic in terms of letting them, giving them a space to kind of think through what they think might be good. And then I think what we provide from my standpoint, where I'm at is basically giving them a sense of, okay, this is what's been selling well. This is something that people have been asking for. You know, looking at the seasons, what's seasonal, what's not, just kind of giving them kind of a baseline to work off of. So it's a partnership in terms of what we decide to put out to customers.
Okay, cool. And then once recipes are secured, does everyone cook everyone's recipe, or does, you know, everyone kind of stick to their own specific menu?
The menus themselves, each chef has their own particular menu, and that's what they focus on. But we do have mixing of the chefs helping. Like, one chef one day will have a really busy day. And so, you know, one chef from Chef Mina from Iran will help, you know, Chef Mem if she has a busy day, and vice versa. And so it's cool to see. That was something I wasn't really expecting when we started the businesses, was to see kind of the collaboration and the learnings between the chefs. And so you'll see a technique, you know, one chef will use a specific technique, and then, you know, the chef will be, one of our other chefs, maybe like from Chef Wing from the Philippines, will like, oh, that's cool, like, I like that. And so you actually kind of see some sharing of techniques and cooking styles over time. So that's been something really neat to see.
Yeah, I mean, I like the idea that, you know, you're introducing, with Foodini, you're introducing new foods to customers, but, like, also the chefs are probably learning new foods amongst themselves too.
Yeah, and it's fun to see them taste each other's foods, because they'll be like, whoa, what is this? I've never... you know, the palates are very different, and the ingredients are sometimes different, and so it's neat to see the chefs experience the different foods between themselves.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder how much their own cooking styles have changed, like, because they're working in such close proximity to people who are cooking foods that are, you know, potentially, like, wildly different in terms of, like,
yeah,
the flavors and the ingredients.
I think that's something we're going to start just reviewing with the chefs probably over time, is kind of just, I think that's one of the things we're going to be focusing on going forward, is just development as well. So what kind of, you know, growth, development opportunities are available to chefs, maybe to learn a different technique, or, you know, to learn some different skill sets. And so that for us is definitely going to be something very important for us going forward.
Yeah. I mean, I can picture it becoming this, like, global sort of fusion menu, like the more time they all spend with each other.
Right. Yeah. And we actually have had a couple of chefs talk about doing like a fusion menu,
yeah,
already.
Exactly.
So I think that's pretty cool.
Be fun. So how does it work logistically? Like if one were to order, how does it all go?
Yeah. So if you're looking to order for like yourself or maybe your family or your couple friends coming over, so you would just go to foodini.com and you can just either click by the chef or just all of the menu items. You could look at vegan items, and you would just pick items a la carte. You can mix and match between the different chefs, you know, order something from each chef, or maybe if you want to stick with just a certain type of cuisine. And then you basically click and add to your cart and pick your next thing is just pick your date, your delivery date and time. And that's pretty much it. So the food comes prepared, ready to eat for dinner. And it's a dinner program, basically. So that's pretty.
How far in advance do you have to order it?
So right now we're doing an 8 p.m. cutoff the night before. So if you wanted to order for tomorrow, you just need to place your order by 8 p.m.
Okay, so you have to know what you want for dinner the next day.
Yeah. but yeah, so we've been working on playing with that model a little bit, and I think probably looking maybe at adding some different options, like going forward in terms of maybe potentially like same day ordering for maybe like a limited menu, or just doing some different options with that as well. But it's been cool with the pre-ordering. It's really great to see a lot of families, like younger families and people who maybe aren't real keen on like on-demand, you know, food, but they want to have really like a nice curated meal. I think it's been really cool to see that be something really popular among that group of people.
Yeah, I like that idea, because then it's like the next day rolls around and you're like, oh, I've already got it figured out. I can just sit back and relax. That's nice.
Yeah.
One thing I really like.
I was going to say we just kicked off a subscription meal plan as well. So every week, just a different meal crafted by one of our chefs is delivered to you. So it's on like a automated subscription, and we do that. And what's cool is we always introduce a couple new dishes every week with that, so you always get a taste of what's coming first.
That's fantastic. So it's always a surprise.
Yeah.
That's so fun. Well, one thing I really like about your website is that each chef has their story as part of the content, so you really get an understanding of like who you're ordering from. And I imagine that probably influences like what you order too. Cause I can picture like reading a chef story and like finding it especially interesting and being like, oh, I would want to taste their food. Also, why did you choose to include the story as part of the website instead of just focusing on, you know, the menu?
Yeah, it's a great question. That's something I thought a lot about early on. And I think what I was trying to replicate in a way, or just kind of grab the essence of, is for me, like, I think some of the best meals I've ever had is just in somebody's house.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because you know, you see them cooking and you see them putting the time and the effort into making sure that, you know, they're feeding you in a really loving way. Right. And so, I wanted to be able to kind of bring that experience to our customers. And so, you know, because I think at the end of the day, what makes a meal great is the person behind it. Mm-hmm. And so really, you can't really have a great meal, I think, unless you really, you know who's cooking it and where it's coming from. And so I think that story of the chef and for people to be able to connect and learn about the person who's feeding them is really important to that. And I think over time we've really seen that be something really positive in terms of creating a really stronger connection with our customers. And, you know, you see some customers who are like, I'm a Chef Majid fan, so they're just all about Chef Majid, and they're like, oh, Majid's cooking, what is he making? Or, people are like following specific chefs. So that's just been really cool to see is to really showcase not just their food, but like the person.
Yeah. I mean, it can only make it better. I think that's such a great idea. We're going to take a quick break and we will be right back to talk more with Noobsa about Foodini.
Maybe you're looking for a coat for yourself, or you want a bold look for your staff. You might even need a new style for your restaurant, whether it's modern, industrial, or farm to table. Whatever you're looking for, Happy Chef has got you covered. Their wide variety of chef apparel and products are perfect for teams of all sizes and styles. And with the industry's easiest custom embroidery, you can add your logo, name, or fun artwork to many of their other products in minutes. Here's what you do. Visit happychef.com and choose from their incredible selection. With only a couple clicks, you can customize many of their products to personalize your look. Right now, they're even offering free custom logo setup on all orders over $150, a $95 value totally free. Visit happychef.com now to order your free 2018 catalog featuring new styles and incredible comfort. Happy Chef, the perfect style, whatever your recipe.
Hey, you're listening to Food Without Borders on Heritage Radio. I'm your host, Sari Kamen. I've been talking to Noobsa Philip Vang. He's the founder and CEO of Foodini in Washington, D.C. So you're in D.C. right now, and I love that you started this company because you were craving the kind of food that you grew up eating, which is, in your case, it's mun, which is a type of Lao food, and you didn't have anywhere to go to eat the kind of food that you remember your mom cooking for you. So you basically created it yourself, which is very smart and resourceful of you. So how has it been going in DC? How has the community received Foodini so far?
Yeah, I think DC, one of the big reasons why I wanted to start it in DC was I thought it was a really, really unique market and unique city. I think you get a lot of people from all over the world coming to work here, to go to school here. And for me, I mean, that's why I came here. I came here for school. And so it was being here for a couple of years really taught me about the city and how, people are really open to trying new things here. They're always really adventurous as well. And I think that just is a part of the culture of the city. And so I knew like this would be something that I think would be a great thing for the city and started here was because, if people have never heard of, Lao food or had Syrian food before or something, I knew like the people here would be down for that. So that was just something that was really a key thing in making me decide to start it here. And it's been true. I mean, a lot of people that I hear, they've been like, oh, I've never had Lao food before, but I ordered it last night and it was amazing. And so we get a lot of comments like that from customers saying, oh, I've never had this, but I ordered it and it was amazing. Or they say, oh, I've had Iranian food, but I've never had Filipino. So this time I ordered Filipino and it was amazing. So it's really cool to see, people trying new things that they didn't have before, or hadn't heard of before. And so I think that in itself is really positive. And then the other factor is just our mission. I mean, I think at the forefront of what we do, it comes down to our mission. And people have really gravitated towards that as well. And D.C. in itself is a very, social justice focused community. And so it's something that has really resonated with them as well.
Yeah, I mean, I am interested to hear if you think that the election has had any, or I guess like the shift in our national sort of psychology has had any impact on your business? I mean, you are in DC, which is obviously a very progressive city, but, you know, of course, it's our nation's capital, and that's where the White House is, and there's been so much anti-immigrant rhetoric happening, like, in the past year. I would think that probably that's benefited your business, like, maybe more people, you know, wanting to support your mission. Have you found that to be the case?
I think it's definitely been something that has made our made us something that's been able to be something that people can take action on. And I think it's not so much of, this is the main reason why we're doing well or in that mm-hmm. case. I think it's a signaling of, you know, being here when we need to be here, and kind of being, you know, something that people can be a part of or participate in a way that can be a reaction to the Trump administration and the things that they've done. And so for us, it's great because, you know, there are people who are very, you know, aware of what's going on abroad in terms of refugee crisis and the displacement of communities and people. But I think it's, they're trying to figure out ways to get involved or how to meet, you know, different, with people from different refugee communities or people who have just, you know, resettled here. And so this gives them, a really unique way to connect with those communities and be able to kind of share, in their experience and in their culture. And so for us, I think it's a lot of times people talk about refugees and what's going on, but many times a lot of people have not met with a refugee. Mm-hmm. And so I think this is a great way that we can start to create those connections.
Yeah. And it's such good timing because sometimes people are just looking for something to do and they don't know what to do. And it's an opportunity to begin somewhere. And I think it's the kind of thing that will attract business, but, you know, it's definitely the food that's going to bring them back the second time. So certainly it's only a testament to the quality of food and the type of business model that you've created, you know, if you are ultimately successful and you have returning customers, and it sounds like that's the case. But, you know, I love that it can be sort of like the first stop for people who want to feel engaged somehow. Food is good for that.
Yeah.
Yeah,
absolutely. And that's something we've seen over time is, people will come to Foodini because they really connect with their mission, and then what they'll think, oh, well, this is nice, and then when they have the food, they're like, oh my gosh, like this is amazing, this food is great, and so it's really reinforcing to be able to support something, but then also get a really good product out of it, and vice versa. As people come for the food, they hear about the food and they're like, oh, I heard you guys had amazing food. And then they learn about our mission. They're like, oh, this is awesome.
Yeah. Even better.
So it's kind of, reinforcing both ways, which is great.
Yeah. What do your parents think of it?
My parents, have always been there 100% believing in what I'm working on. And I think a lot of it comes down to them understanding, they understand the experience of being refugees and what the challenges it is. And so for them, they've always been people who believe in giving back and supporting our communities. And so, you know, I think they love that I'm able to do that, and, you know, be able to connect with different people from different places and create opportunities and create, you know, amazing food. And so, my parents, maybe if they were just a little bit younger, I know they'd want to jump in and try to help wherever they could. But yeah, they're really excited and really happy.
Yeah. I mean, they must be really proud, and like, I would think they'd be really touched that like you've created something cause you were inspired by, you know, their stories and the kind of food that you ate growing up in their household.
Yeah. One thing that I guess always kind of sticks with me, and is, I think for me, one of the biggest inspirations behind it was, I think a lot of times people, you know, when, you know, refugees come here to the States as refugees, there's a lot of people, you know, they don't get to, be able to dream much anymore. Right. It's kind of like my mom and my dad, they came here and they just had to work and they had to support their family. And, you know, whatever dreams that they had back in their home country, they're gone. And so, you know, this is a way to allow people to dream again and to create something for themselves. So that's a big, for me, it's a big piece of it as well.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to speak for your parents, of course, but I can picture that in some ways, like this is their dream, you know, like having a child who is successful and was able to pursue his or her own dreams and honor them, you know, simultaneously at the same time. I think that's a really lovely story.
Yeah. An author in the Hmong community, Kalkilia Yang, she says, as refugees, the only dreams that we have left are our children.
Yeah.
So I think that touches on that very strongly.
Yeah. Are there any, speaking of dreams, aspirations down the road potentially to go beyond D.C.?
Yeah, definitely. We are...
Good. Come to New York.
We've been in D.C. for about a little over a year and a half now, and we're actually working on raising our seed round to help us expand to in D.C., grow to all the different parts of the DMV, and then looking at expanding on the East Coast as well.
Fantastic. Well, best of luck with that. If I know any VCs, I will send them your way.
Yeah.
Not quite a tech show, but who knows, maybe. Well, Noopsa, tell us, for those people out there listening who are lucky enough to be in D.C. and will be able to experience Foodini, where can they find you?
Yeah, you just go to foodini.com. So FOODHINI.com, like Houdini, Harry Houdini, but Foodini. You can order a meal there. We do catering as well. And, so we can go online and do the catering orders as well.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Noopsa. It's been a pleasure to speak to you, and I really love your concept, and I hope to be able to try it one day when I'm, I don't know, visiting D.C. or who knows, maybe you'll come here first. But it sounds delicious, and it's just such a wonderful idea. So congratulations on making it all come to fruition. And thank you out there for listening. If you're listening, I guess this is not live, so thank you for downloading the show, either listening on Heritage Radio or on iTunes, on Stitcher Radio, and on Spotify. We'll see you next time on heritageradionetwork.org.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.